Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-778-8874. Again, that's 337-8874.
We had the dreaded phone number fumble to start off the day. That's
how you know what? The problem is that due to the earthquake, we have relocated, and new office numbers start with 337.
So. My brain fell over, and it doesn't work anymore.
It's been chaotic, to say the least. So, but we are here. We have, as much as we can, we've been trying to provide our weekly wellness radio shows, and, we have another one.
In the yellow-tagged studios of KUBO Radio. 337-8874 is the phone number, once again. And also, if you remember, as this show unfolds and you're like, oh, this is like the coolest show ever, I wish my cousin Freddie were hearing it, then...
That's so 80s.
but we have podcasts now, which, because in the 80s you wouldn't have been able to do podcasts, or you could have maybe, but they hadn't been thought of yet. And anyway, you didn't have access. And anyway... Now you do, and it is, and you can, just zip over there with your little iPod and go over to KXL Radio and hook it up and download the podcast into your iPod and take it home. And, it's amazing what people can do nowadays with technology. So it's over there, KXLRadio.com, podcast, Let's Talk About It, and we live on forever in little digital ones and zeros.
Especially, today's show, we're going to talk about prevention, and... This program is really good for the schools, and we had scheduled this so, our local teachers could be, as they're going to school or they're in class.
Or they're in vacation.
Are they
still on vacation?
The ones in Calexico, the schools are still closed, but here in El Centro, everything's going, everything's normal.
Yeah.
So, if they get a chance, they can access this show through KXLRadio.com and click on the I podcast.
Yes.
Icon for podcast. And but today's guest is Sarah Ferguson.
Good morning.
She works for Imperial County Behavioral Health Alcohol and Drug Prevention Program. And today she's going to talk about one of the programs that Behavioral Health has. And just to let you know, Behavioral Health is not just for mental health, but also the alcohol and drugs. So it's a both.
Two-headed monster.
Oh. It's both. It's not a monster.
No.
But it's a both. Both services, and they also Behavioral Health has the prevention component on mental health, and they also have the prevention component for alcohol and drug. So Sarah's going to talk about today.
So what type of prevention do you specialize in, Sarah? Good morning.
Well, substance abuse prevention, Scott.
Okay, we have to start with what was in the 80s. It started with the prevention.
Sure.
I guess that didn't work.
I'm 1987.
me neither. I was
DARE.
89.
Well, the DARE program, there was a lot of prevention programs, the DARE program, that just say no. I remember those times that the commercials that would say, a guy would crack an egg on a hot skillet and say, this is your brain on drugs. So I guess that didn't work?
No, I would say not.
I've tried that out here, and it does work, but it takes a little bit longer than you would think it would take. You have to actually leave the egg out there for quite a while. I'm serious, you do. But it does work. I'm going to date myself. I was in sixth grade in 1972, and I can recall getting prevention services from my teacher, who did like a week of chunks of education about, I don't know, what do I remember? People on LSD jumping off of buildings.
The bad things.
Trying to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, dude, if you try to fly, why don't you start from the ground? Hello? Birds don't need to climb up on something to fly. but I can remember, kind of bits and pieces of that from sixth grade. So prevention evidently has been in the mix and think back to alcohol. I mean, certainly... Prohibition was like the ultimate prevention program. So as long, maybe as long as there's been substances, there's been people who, or substances that could be misused for making your mind a certain way. Maybe there's been a group of people who said, yeah, maybe not such a good idea. So, why do we have prevention programs? What kind of harm factors are out there? What kind of bad things happen?
If you can think of it, probably it does it to your body. I mean, the effects on your brain, memory loss, it shortens your life, causes harm to different organs. There's a variety of different things, you know, that it can do to you. And especially for kids, they need to know that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it got on the newspaper, well, here locally, because there's been, especially with this, a local businessman is trying to get a license to get a open up a marijuana dispensary.
Medicinal
marijuana dispensary. And there was a lot of comments. You know, they put it on hold. You know, the city council put it on hold. They're looking, you know, what kind of harm it's going to do to the community. And a lot of feedback that people said on the through the web on the local newspaper said
is it going to generate local revenue?
Well,
I'm just curious.
It so far, people who have licenses to distribute medicinal marijuana have made millions and millions of dollars.
And pay taxes in the cities where they're located.
And pay taxes. They are so very profitable. But the comments that the people are saying is that, you know, it's going to cost more harm. You know, mm-hmm. It's going to cost more more people to use drugs. Some of the comments said, well, there's already...
Already here?
There's already people here using drugs, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't need a dispensary to do that.
Well,
because there's already people using drugs. So, but that's where the prevention component comes in.
Well, and this is complex because the medicinal marijuana, you require a doctor's authorization, I suppose, some sort of prescription.
Yes, but I know many people who have gotten a prescription medicinal marijuana, but they don't have cancer and they're not at all ill at all.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't be a gateway process, if you will, because you wouldn't just be able to, like, make it happen. You'd have to go to some lengths to obtain your card, to get registered, yeah. To do yada, 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 yada. You'd have to have the
but
money to
I'm
do that.
But what I'm trying to say is that that's another radio show topic.
Okay. Or, so.
But what we're trying to say is about the prevention. Is that, you know, there's the fear that if you put this medicinal, this dispensary, it's going to cost more people to use drugs.
Mm-hmm. Or then what happens if they legalize marijuana? Mm-hmm. That's on the ballot in November.
In November, mm-hmm. That's correct. 337-8874 if you want to weigh in on this one.
But this for parents and for teachers who are listening and for any community member here in a community, prevention. We have a prevention program.
Mm-hmm.
So what does a prevention program do? It's for kids and for...
Well, we have programs primarily for children, but we can also service adults. But kids are really the target population because that's where you really want to cut them off at the pass.
Well, that's where people start. And once they've started, you can't unprevent it.
Right. And in the past, the program's primarily been focused on just providing information, giving presentations at schools or local human service agencies,
career
places
fairs,
like that.
Right.
Fairs. But within the last
this is a picture of a lung that's been subject to marijuana
exactly.
smoke, and it's really bad for you, and don't ever do it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But within the last 6 months, we got this curriculum, which is evidence-based. It's been tried and tested for many, many years, called the Too Good for Drugs program through the Mendez Foundation. We've had really good success with it. We are implementing it at a variety of different schools. I think we have 30 groups going right now, probably at between 12 and 15 schools in the valley, from junior high kids all the way to high school.
Now, when did you guys kind of begin to initiate this?
We got the curriculum in December, January, mm-hmm. and then we started it probably in February.
So you start in February, you already have like
yes.
30 groups in 15 schools?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like there was a market for this.
Yes, we have a lot of schools asking for it. The problem we're having is we don't have enough people to offer it, which is a good problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what makes it so, how is that market created? I mean, what kind of things does this program have that make it useful?
Well, it doesn't just, you know, offer information on the drugs themselves, but it also includes topics like goal setting, managing your emotions, how to make healthy decisions, things that encompass a variety of different things that just promote healthy living that inadvertently target the possibility of experimenting or using drugs.
In other words, you give them tools
right.
for kids mm-hmm. to learn these tools. In other words, for them, when they come to the situation of somebody else, you know, offering them
mm-hmm.
to smoke a joint or...
Exactly.
They have these tools that you've provided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing, too, a lot of the schools like mm-hmm. is we have kids that are participating in the groups that maybe have some anger issues or they're just not able to really express themselves in a healthy way. And so maybe the student doesn't have a problem with possibly experimenting with mm-hmm. drugs, but by putting them in the group, they're being given the tools to help control themselves. So the school's kind of like the anger management component of it also because we don't offer those services through behavioral health.
Mm-hmm. And it's the too good for drugs
and
violence.
The mm-hmm. the too good for drugs and violence is high school, and then junior high is too good for drugs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, do you have a difference between the junior high kids and the high school kids, you know, the populations, or is it that maybe high school kids have already experimented more, or what
you know,
is it?
I think it really varies from school to school. Some schools, the kids, they don't really open up a whole lot and talk about it. But then I've had junior high kids who've said, made comments about marijuana. Oh, yeah, going to smoke a joint, this, that, and the other. And I've had high school kids say the same thing, and then both have said neither. So I think it just depends on the student and the location they're at.
Is there any data that suggests onset use average age or any relative, I mean, where should we be aiming?
Well, I'm hoping that for our county, this curriculum will help with that because it includes a pre and post survey. Mm-hmm. So once we finish out this course for the semester,
mm-hmm.
hopefully we'll take all that data and we can do a comparison and see. And then when we offer it next semester, and then as we continue to do it, we can build up. Mm-hmm.
So the pre and post survey actually asks questions
yes.
like
the,
when,
the pre and post survey are
if
the same.
And when.
Right. The pre and post survey are the same, and it measures the curriculum, and then it measures the students' growth and how they receive mm-hmm. the information.
Okay. And is there, first of all, you know, this curriculum or this program can be offered at school sites, but it can also be offered anywhere else?
Yes, actually, we started using it with some adult clients with ARC Imperial Valley,
mm-hmm.
and the counselor who's implementing it there is just having a really great time working with the individuals mm-hmm. there. They're really receptive to it with the same topics that the kids are liking, you know, the goal setting, managing mm-hmm. emotions, et cetera. They're just really feeding into it and getting a lot out of it. So, and we're hoping to get that out with clients at CalWORKs. Mm-hmm. We'll modify it some to fit the population, but for those types of people, I think, you know, with those problems, we can really help them.
I mean, now that I'm a parent, my daughter's still not in school age, but I mean, I would love to have, you know, there's always these peer pressures and a lot of these environmental factors that sometimes it's out of my, you know, I'm not there with my child 24/7. You know, they're at school. So I would love for my child to learn these tools. If, you know, I'm also going to be at home and telling her, you know what, you know, just trying to educate her. But, you know, once they're at school, you know, sometimes kids, you know, just, okay, mm-hmm. you're out the door, you know, I love you, Mom and Dad, but over there, you know, and especially during that time where friends become very important, you know, I would love for these services to be provided.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any cost?
No, it's free of cost.
So then just schools need to contact you
right.
and just coordinate something?
Mm-hmm.
Well, right before the top of the hour, before all the bells ring and all the kiddies go in, do you have a contact number?
Earthquake, let me think. What's my phone number?
I know. It happened to me, too.
339-6464.
And then... Are you going to go back, or is that going to be the permanent number, or is that a temporary number?
That'll be a temporary number.
Okay, so 339...
I think. We'll
339-6464?
Yes.
And your name is...
Sarah Ferguson.
Okay, and so again, if you're going to rush into school right now and start your class, and you're interested in maybe exploring the possibility of a prevention program for junior high or high school kids on your school site
mm-hmm.
or other places,
mm-hmm.
as are applicable.
We have elementary schools interested also.
The what?
We have elementary schools interested also. So we're not limiting it to junior high or high school.
Nice.
So after the break, we'll talk about what the curriculum, how long it is, you know, all these, and for how long and how many kids can you serve. You know, is it only just a couple of kids, or can it be several, all the school sites, or all the population at a school?
And we'll take as many as we can handle, we'll take them. We've done from 10 kids to 150 within a class, though. So.
I wonder if there's any data that compares class size or amount of people served at a single time in terms of outcomes. That'd be interesting.
That would be a good study.
Okay. All right, well, let's go. It's a little bit early, but let's go ahead and do this now because it's like a natural break in the show, right? This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Operators are standing. No, 337-8874 is the phone number. Again, we're available on podcasts. So if you're kind of like, oh, wait, I didn't quite get that, just remember, in a week or so, KXO.com website will be carrying this show. And we're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk more about this prevention program, Too Good for Drugs. Wait, you have to do it with your fingers. Too Good for Drugs. With our guest today, Sarah Ferguson.
Very 80s.
This is Let's Talk About It. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness. And I'm Scott, and there's Maria running through the parking lot to her meeting. And we're here today with Sarah Ferguson.
Hello.
And we're your voice for wellness, as usual. And our phone number is 337-8874, as usual. And we are talking about alcohol substance use prevention. And with Sarah Ferguson, who works for the alcohol and drug departments for behavioral health. And you're like the prevention lady now, huh?
Yes.
So you go out, and a lot of what you do now, a lot, you do a lot for a lot of different things, but a lot of what you do now is go out into the community and run this Too Good for Drugs evidence-based.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that important? Why do we keep, like, it's like a trademark name now, it's like evidence-based.
Well, it's kind of a validation of the curriculum, you know, it's not just slapping something together and throwing it out there saying it's going to work. By saying it's evidence-based, it's been tried and tested and proven. So
now, one of the advantages of just saying no to drugs is you could pretty much say that in like 3 to 1 seconds and walk away. Is the Too Good for Drugs program that you're doing, describe the kind of, how long is this, like a single session? What happens here?
As we were talking about before, there's a difference between the high school curriculum and the junior high. The high school curriculum is set up to be for freshmen through seniors. It's just one curriculum for the whole high school. It's 16 weeks. The sessions themselves are about an hour long, and there's 14 total.
So once a week then? For
once a week. It depends. The way we implement it is we go with the school schedule. However they want to work with us, we'll work with them. We make it work. As I was saying before, we have the pre- and post-survey, and the way the curriculum was designed was to provide those surveys separately. So when we first go in, we kind of give an introduction to the curriculum, and then we give the students the pre-survey, and then we close for the day.
What kind of questions does that survey ask? Just out of curiosity.
What would you do if your friends did this? What would you do? And you choose, you know, A, B,
so
C, or D.
So life scenarios, basically.
Yeah, or how do you feel about this? Strongly, you know, not at all, you know, questions on a sliding scale.
Are they basic questions like marijuana is dangerous?
They're questions that are relative to the age. You know, high school kids, there will be questions like, oh, if you went to a party and one of your friends was drinking a beer and asked you if you wanted to drink, what would you do? Or would you drink it? How strongly do you feel about this? You know, questions like that. And then junior high, pretty similar, but just a little more age appropriate.
So they even have places for, like, I'm not sure,
right,
or maybe.
Yeah, there's a middle of the road. So.
Good, good.
And then the junior high curriculum, it's 12 weeks with 10 weeks of the course and then the 2 extra for the surveys.
So a lot of this is it sounds like, and okay, so now let's go back to the curriculum. It sounds like, so part of what you do is education on what substances do to people in terms of...
Yeah, the substance abuse part of it for both curriculums comes towards the end of the course. The first about 6 or 7 lessons are focused on life skills and, you know, healthy living and all that. And then once you get to about lesson 7, 8, 9, 10, you start getting into alcohol, marijuana, addiction, and those types of topics.
So it really is kind of designed, I was saying, you know, thinking as you began to describe Too Good for Drugs, that if you think back to earlier prevention, I guess, it was pretty much focused, including the stuff I went through in the 70s, on drugs are too bad for you.
Right. That would be another good name for it.
Well, no, well, that's the way it was. It was
right.
So what would happen was they would really focus on it. It really wasn't anything about you.
Right.
It was more about, but these are really dangerous, risky things that no one in their right mind would ever do. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, junior high kids aren't in their right minds and don't want to be particularly.
Yeah. Well, what's good about the curriculum is it doesn't, you know, just completely try to polarize kids from, you know, participating in substance use or abuse. What it does is when each lesson starts off, it kind of opens it up to discussion, whatever the topic may be. For instance, yesterday I did a lesson with some junior high kids on stress, and the first activity was to have one student kind of just sit there, and he was playing the role of, I don't remember the name that the curriculum gives, but he just sits there real quietly, and then about 7 other kids come playing the role of different people in the student's life, and they all want him to do something, and they're asking him a bunch of questions at the same time. I need you to do this, come do this, you know, just saying a bunch of different things. And what the role play activity does is show how the one student exhibits signs of stress, and then you ask the students, well, what did you notice about it? And they'll say, oh, well, he started to act, you know, kind of upset, and he looked kind of scared. And then you say, oh, well, what do you think that is? And then the kids, you know, eventually say, oh, well, he looks stressed. And so that goes into the topic of stress. And then you start asking the kids, well, do you ever feel stressed? What things make you feel stressed out? And how do you feel when you are stressed out? So it kind of opens the door that way.
What kind of stuff do you get out of that? Are you surprised at the depth of the answers or the shallowness of the answers? Or
when I first went to the curriculum, I looked at it, and, you know, being older, I kind of thought, wow, this sounds pretty cheesy.
Like older, like in your 20s?
Yes.
Older. Okay.
Older than the kids I'm working with.
Pretty much on the downhill slope now.
Yes. I thought some of the stuff looked pretty cheesy. You know, I was thinking, I know if I was in it, I don't think that'd work for me. But I'm wrong. I'm looking at it, you know, through the wrong pair of eyes. When I've gone in there, the kids have just, like, been so receptive to it, and they've just really been into it.
Are they cognizant of the stress that they're going through, for example? With that?
You know, yeah. One of the activities yesterday was for them to write down on a piece of paper some things that caused them stress. And once we finished, I went through and read, you know, different things and had the students raise their hands. Oh, does this make you feel stressed out? And so you see all these kids, you know, they're starting to realize, oh, something that stresses me out stresses out my classmates too. So they have something in common. And then, as I was saying before, it doesn't just, you know, try to polarize the kids from the drugs or the alcohol. It shows them that, you know, we're all at risk for it in one way or another because we all feel these emotions, you know, that can lead us down that path. It's just in how you handle yourself.
Now, does a lesson like that actually, like, so the topic basically was stress. Does it ever go back to substances, or does it just leave stress as part of managing yourself? You know what I mean? Because obviously, I mean, for me, I guess, obviously, stress leads to coping mechanisms, and one of the coping mechanisms for stress is various types of substance use,
right,
all the way around the spectrum, legal, not legal, prescribed, not prescribed, et cetera, et cetera. And those coping mechanisms may have issues. I mean, they may be short-term effective and long-term not very effective.
Mm-hmm.
They may, you know, whatever, whatever. But clearly there's a link between stress and substance use.
Well, the curriculum itself, it doesn't really link topic to drugs.
That's
what
neat.
It does is the lessons are designed to build on top of each other so the students start connecting the dots.
Sweet. I almost appreciate that because, you know, it's like at the end of the lesson, see, we told you stress caused drug use and drugs are bad for you.
No,
I mean, I think it's nice that the program respects the beginnings of decision making and responsibility taking. And which probably are keys to prevention,
right. Mm-hmm.
Basically.
Yeah.
Thinking about what you're supposed to do and kind of balancing your long-term goals and what's going on right now, you know,
yeah.
Better shot.
Yeah, and I think it's also helpful, too, having myself and then some of our other staff who are doing it. We're a little bit younger, so the kids can kind of relate to us more. They don't really see us as authority figures, and they don't really regard us as teachers, so they open up more.
Oh,
so
that's
helpful. You know, they feel like they can talk to us about things, you know, they'll talk to us about problems with their parents or, you know, having trouble with their friends or, oh, this makes me really mad, you know. Whereas, you know, when we go in on the first day, they're kind of closed off because, you know, we're strangers
yeah,
to them. But
yeah.
As time goes on, they start to warm up to us, and it's kind of cool.
Does the nerdiness that plagued your high school years continue to haunt you now? Or as a young adult, are you able to kind of...
Oh, I was never nerdy.
I'm just
kidding. Yeah, it's kind of cool, you know, not being that far removed from high school.
Yeah,
I still.
But you're grown up now, so you
right.
don't get judged by the kind of, they don't put you under like, the microscope of peer pressure stuff.
And, right.
Yeah, neat. 337-8874 is the phone number. We're here today with Sarah Ferguson, who's the prevention lady for Imperial County Behavioral Health Alcohol and Drug Programs, substance abuse prevention stuff that we do. So we just started this in February. We've got 30 classes or 30 program sessions going in 15 different schools. There is a predominance of, I mean, drug use is pretty common in the Imperial Valley. Is that fair to say? Amongst youth?
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of stuff do you see when you're doing these classes? Do you see any indicators of that? Or
I've had some kids, you know, I can tell when they come back in, they've probably been. I don't know what they've been using, but you can tell their eyes, you know, are glazed and everything. You can tell that they're kind of out of it. And if that's the case, you know, we'll either make the referral.
And that's almost like a little red flag in and of itself,
right.
Because you might suspect that some of the kids who are experimenting with youth or have bigger problems going on, may be able to mitigate that and not use while they're in school. Hello.
Right. Some of the kids, maybe they're not showing indicators of using. It's kind of hard with certain age groups because, you know, they think it's funny.
Oh, everybody wants to be cool, too.
They want to talk about, oh, yeah, I just came back from smoking a joint or whatever. They make comments like that. And so you have to be able to draw the line between kids who are just trying to get attention
yes.
and kids who
yeah.
are actually saying, yeah. hey, look, I'm doing drugs, you know.
Well, and that's interesting because it kind of points out a degree of glamorization.
Right. There is. I mean, you know, if you look on MTV... A lot of the music videos really portray people doing drugs and, you know, they make it out to be a really cool lifestyle, and that's what kids are looking up to these days.
Well, and what separates children from adults, well, one of the very clear separators is the use of psychoactive substances in some sort of recreational or not fashion,
mm-hmm.
right? And whether it's alcohol use or tobacco use or anything. Does Too Good for Drugs separate tobacco? Does it
yes,
touch tobacco?
Tobacco is its own... subject.
Good. And how does it manage to broach that subject, because it's, you know, now you're not going to get thrown in jail for smoking cigarettes.
It kind of comes at it as being like, oh, gross tobacco, you know, because it makes your mouth nasty and it turns your lungs black and makes your breath stink and your teeth turn yellow and all that. So it's kind of like, it kind of makes it more of a social faux pas.
Yeah. You know, it might be interesting to kind of have a, like a little group on why do cool people smoke?
What's so cool about it?
Well, why, you know, because if somebody who teens perceive as cool, you know,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, smokes, then now, well, geez, you're doing this really uncool thing. How do we balance that?
Right.
What's going on?
And
there?
There's a lot of kids in high school and probably junior high too that are smoking, and you see them out after school closes, you know, they're outside smoking. So. They have access to it.
Nice. Do you talk at all about the psychopharmacology, basically what substances, you know, I guess the undeniable truth of substances, even if you really don't ever want anybody to ever put anything psychoactive in their bodies at all, you know, put down that cup of coffee, even if you're really, really way on the far side of the wall of tolerance of using substances to manage your mind or to help you in the management of your mind or to not help you or whatever, it's ubiquitous. It's been a part of human history for as long as since somebody figured out that this plant leaf didn't fill up your stomach, but it kept you awake. is there a way to kind of does too good for drugs balance that? Like, kind of complicated walking into that question, but does too good for drugs balance the fact that apparently substance use is a part of most adult human existence?
You know, it doesn't really go there. It pretty much just how to have students live healthily. It doesn't really talk about, well, there's adults that do use substances and look at them, where they're at now. Do you really want to be like that sort of thing? It doesn't really go there.
Well, no, I mean, that would kind of be the kind of scare off
right.
way of dealing with it. But
and kids hear that stuff all the time, too, and it's, I think they're kind of closed off to it.
You know, I mean, something harmless perhaps would be, you know, a history of coffee. And you know, Rousseau, the famous philosopher, drank like 50 cups a day or 35 cups a day or something.
Well, here's actually a good example. In one of my classes, kids were making a lot of comments about marijuana and how, you know, cool it is to be smoking pot. And, you know, I made the comment, well, you know, marijuana is a gateway drug and it leads to harder drugs, you know, like meth and heroin. And I made the comment to them, you know, people who are stuck on those drugs, you should see the way they look. They don't look like healthy kids like you do. A lot of them are missing teeth. You know, they're really sunken in. They've got sores on themselves. I said, is that really how you want to look? And the comments kids will make is, well, my uncle does drugs and he doesn't look like that.
Yes, yes.
So how do you broach that?
Well, and that's kind of always been the risk that prevention runs when it offers absolutes as, you know, if you smoke marijuana, you will proceed down this gateway path, which has already been proven not to really exist.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, just because you rode a bike before you drove a car, there's not really a correlation between the two. And most people who try alcohol or who try cannabis, and that's the majority of Americans, don't go on to use. Mm-hmm. Only small numbers of people go that way. However, the people that do go that way went the same pathway everybody else went.
Right.
But I guess the point being is you've got this credibility thing with kids, and if you start throwing out stuff that doesn't match their credibility test, they tend to really quickly and globally
mm-hmm.
dismiss everything else you say. So, you know, you give them one thing that doesn't work, and they're like, oh, well, is anything you're saying
yeah.
true?
And the kids that are high risk, a lot of them won't have a problem talking back to you. So if you tell them something and they don't believe what you say, they're going to question you on it. And so you have to have yourself backed up with information. And if you can't, you know, rebut all their comments, well, how does that help them?
Yeah. Well, and this has always been a kind of tough cookie to bake, because in the history of prevention, well, you know, use rates have stayed fairly consistent. You know, sometimes they'll trend up a little bit, sometimes they'll trend down a little bit. But it seems like, I mean, if you look at, I was reading a study the other day, the largest growth of cannabis smokers are the baby boomer generations. People over the age of 50.
Oh, wow.
Are the fastest growing population of new cannabis smokers. So you're going to have to start doing senior prevention.
I wonder if they'll come out with something for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we can modify. We
remarkably higher rates of new use than with teens, interestingly enough.
Mm-hmm.
What are kind of stuff do you see when you go out to the classrooms that are worth sharing, I guess, with an audience of parents and an audience of teachers and stuff like that?
Well, really what I see is I don't really get a whole lot of comments from kids saying that they've used drugs or thinking about it. A lot of what I get is kids saying that they don't know how to control themselves. And they don't say, I don't know how to control myself.
That would be a degree of control.
Right.
Even in expressing
when we get
that
to certain topics, you know, about how, here's a good one. One of the topics that we talk about is conflict management. And when we get to that subject, kids often say, well, if somebody's talking about me, I just want to hit them. Can I do that? No, you don't deal with...
Well, you could, but...
You could, but it's not going to help you any.
What happens next, you know?
Right. And so when we talk about different ways to deal with conflict, you know, they just say, no, I just... If somebody's talking about me, I'm just going to go up to them and hit them. And that's what I really see as kids, not being able to control their anger and having violent outbursts. And kids even talk about with their parents, you know, they can't talk to their parents, so they have all that anger bottled up. And it's just kids not being able to express themselves. That's very common with all the students that we've had.
It occurs to me that this tendency towards impulsiveness, is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
This tendency towards impulsiveness may be something that's actually just a natural wave of who we are, because if you think of, like information, for example, it used to be if I wanted to learn something, some abstract chemical formula or something, I would have to like take time off of work or on a weekend go down to a library and walk through the stacks and pull out a card, you know, like the dusty little cards, and pull the card and see if the book was checked out and go back and do it and figure out what page it was on and yada, yada, yada. Well, now all you have to do is take your phone out,
mm-hmm,
and tell your phone what to do, and in some sort of recognizable, and your phone even will correct you. It's like, it's intuitive, so it knows that you're like, well, kind of what you want, but you're not asking for it correctly, and it kind of fixes it along the way. And you can have this information virtually instantly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, and that seems to be, I mean, that's just information management, but it seems to be pretty much part and parcel with how we've designed our lives to work. I'm wondering if children who've grown up in that environment, who don't have any other model of mindfulness or delayed gratification or just simply having to sit with the inability of getting something pretty quickly. I wonder if that plays out when they begin to manage their lives and they begin to manage their emotions, because they never really had a model of stop, wait, delay, work hard, and then it's dealt with, you know.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, I guess only time will tell with that. But, I mean, it's funny you bring up technology, though, because in all of our classes, you know, you ask the students, oh, what kind of stuff do you like to do? You know, just when you're trying to get to know the kids, video games, TV, computer. Very few say sports.
I was reading another study. I read studies. I'm sorry. It's my problem. in science. And what it said was that they're tracking, traditionally in the brains, you know, different parts of the body have different pieces and different amounts of brain structure dedicated to their operation. And in human history, like regardless of which model you subscribe to, all of it, the largest portion of the brain for any single part of the body was the portion of the brain dedicated to the index finger of the human hand. It has now switched, and only in this generation, and it is now the thumb. The thumb has taken over and is now the predominant part of the brain. And I'm part of the index finger generation, so I'm like I'm still my thumb, and that's why my thumbs are just, yes, my thumbs are a little bit slow. Thank you. But now it's isn't that amazing?
We'll probably see a rise in carpal tunnel as these kids get older.
Either that, or they're gonna have like biceps where people's wrists used to be, or something like that.
Yeah.
Giant thumbs. No, the thumbs would have to stay nimble to a certain extent, so they couldn't get.
That's
too big.
True.
They couldn't get too big. Okay, so let's recap. You now have an evidence-based prevention program.
Mm-hmm.
It is available for which age groups?
High school, junior high, and then we won't limit it to those groups only. We will do elementary school if the schools are interested and if we do have the resources.
And typically, most kids begin experimenting in 5th, 6th grade? I mean, does it go down that far? 12 years old?
You know, that's what our school administrators down here are saying, is that they're finding their 5th and 6th graders experimenting with drugs.
Yeah, that's what California data suggests, mm-hmm, also. So there, you know, if you've got people seeing that and people also reporting that on data,
mm-hmm,
then you've got a bingo.
Yeah, and the California Healthy Kids Survey just came out.
Yeah.
What was it, within the last couple months?
Yes, yeah.
So in 3 years, we'll see if there's a change.
Oh, that's right, because now you're in Imperial County,
right,
and you're doing this Too Good,
yeah,
for Drugs program. And by then, it's going to be really popular. It's going to be
hopefully
happening in every school. and even with fifth and sixth graders, mm-hmm. because that may be a good age to begin teaching people that self-management. It may be an important long-term skill to use,
right.
to kind of avoid some of the problems of adult life.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting, too, I think, to see one of the things I want to do with these surveys is to see how the schools compare with themselves. You know, how the school compares to itself from day one to the end of it, and then, you know, each other school. And then I think it'd be interesting, too, with our counselors who are providing treatment services at schools that we're not providing this curriculum in, if there's a difference, if the trends change.
Well, and you know, it's difficult to do experiments because there's so many variables
right.
here. But even with different school accountability measures,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I can certainly imagine what brains that have been not only disrupted by their developmental stuff, being junior high, hello, those brains are not like grounded brains, but brains that have been disrupted by chemical use and by disruption and by stress and by pressure and by some of the other kind of negative consequences of substance use, probably not only do not learn as much as the other brains comparatively, but probably in all likelihood disrupt other brains around them through their behaviors or through their interactions, or even through their you know, something as obvious as peer pressure influence type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, I don't think you're ever going to be able to go back to the administrators and say, look, this is an example of a school where we've been going for 3 years, and as you can see, their accountability factors, their grade point average, their test scores, their learning, whatever, is steadily trending upward, and we think we're a part of that. But clearly, if you look at the flip side of that and look at the disruption and distress
right.
that would reflect itself in lower performance scores due to substance use, prevention plays a big part in schools in trying to manage this ever increasingly tight version of accountability that really focuses on
mm-hmm.
you know, how, which bubble you filled in correctly after an earthquake in April.
Yeah.
You know, kids are all over the place right now.
Yeah. Actually, you know, because that earthquake happened right before spring break.
Right.
And so we were off that whole week, came back. The first class I was in, I said, how many times have you been asked about the earthquake today? And the kids actually said, oh, not that much. And they weren't really that upset about it.
Good. So, let's hope that reflects itself on our test scoring this year. Okay, let's throw out your contact information once again, and you can give whatever parameters you need to there.
Okay, my name's Sarah Ferguson, Imperial County Behavioral Health, and my phone number, as of right now, 339-6464.
Okay, great. And then hopefully if you do relocate soon, then back to your original place or whatever, that phone number will somehow trace back.
Right, or you could call our switchboard, 482-4000.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what, 482-4000, when in doubt, call the main number of Behavioral Health. Say Sarah Ferguson, and they're wonderful people, answer that phone.
Yeah.
They are so nice.
Yes.
And they're really good at tracking us down, even when...
we don't know where we're at.
Yeah, I don't deliberately try to hide, okay? I just want to point that out. But sometimes it's pretty hard to find us. And you know, we have buildings with no cell phone
mm-hmm.
coverage and portable moving phone stuff. So appreciate your patience. Appreciate coming aboard today, Sarah. How was
Thank
this for you?
Thank you for having me.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Pretty nice.
Good. Welcome, and best of luck out there
Thank
in the community
you.
Working with the kids. I noticed you don't have any duct tape marks on you, so they haven't taken you hostage.
No,
either.
Not yet, but I've still got a few more weeks to go, so we'll see.
Good. Appreciate what you're doing for the community.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming aboard.
Thank you.
This is Let's Talk About It. Just join us for another fun-filled, educational, and eventful show next week. And don't forget, if you want more information about this prevention telecast that we just did, visit us at the KXO.com website, and you'll find a podcast with Sarah Ferguson talking about prevention with me and Maria.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.